Welcome to Intel on AI, a podcast series that brings you the latest on cutting-edge tech driving artificial intelligence in the enterprise today. And now your hosts, Derek Osborne and Emily Hudson.
Hello and welcome. My name is Derek Osborne.
And I'm Emily Hudson.
And this is another edition of Intel on AI podcast. Today's guest is Thorin Rodriguez, and he is the CEO and founder of Big Data Corp. Welcome, Thorin. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your company and your role within the company?
Yeah, sure thing. So I started the company back in 2013, and I've been working on the tech industry for about 10 years before that. And then in 2013, I kind of had this crazy idea of opening a company to do something in the big data space, which was something that, especially in Brazil, was really just starting off, was really at the beginning. And I had the crazy idea of trying to map out all of the web space in the country. So map out all of the e-commerce stores, map out all of the different websites, and aggregate all the data from all of these different sources into a single place where people could actually query the data and play around with it and extract some insights from it. And the company kind of grew from there. So we started off very focused on data aggregation, crawling, capturing very, very big volumes of data, and went into data validation and identity validation and a whole bunch of other things that were kind of very close to that or for which the data was very applicable.
Can you talk about the kind of companies that would be interested in what Big Data Corp has to offer?
We work with everything from retail to financial services to the travel industry to startups to basically anyone who needs structured data and feels like the data that they need is available somewhere in the public web will come to us and ask us to deliver that data to them. So if you think about everything from client onboarding, where you want to automate the onboarding process a little bit and fill out some of the fields automatically, or you want to validate the identity of whoever's signing up for your service automatically, or even if you want to leverage unstructured data to build risk or intelligence models, we can deliver the data or we can deliver the service to enable those kinds of applications to our clients.
You mentioned you founded this company in Brazil. Is this a Brazil-centric company, or what geos do you play in?
So we started off very focused in the local market here in Brazil, but over time we actually got a lot of inquiries about our services from international companies. And these were both companies that were located outside of the country and were trying to come into the country and were trying to open up their operations in the country, and so they needed the local expertise that we were able to provide, but also companies that wanted to leverage the services that we had and that we provided in their own local countries. And so we started expanding after about 1 year, expanding first to Latin America, and then Europe and the United States and other regions. So today, I would say that we have clients in every continent except Africa, probably.
Wow. And how many people are within your data set?
So we have several hundreds of millions of people and actually a couple hundred million businesses. We won't always have sort of a unique identifier for each individual person because we might only have a phone number or an email address or a username or whatever they used when they were posting information online. But if we think about it in terms of individual entities that we're able to map, then we have, you know, these several hundred million different people.
How does Big Data Corp do what they do? What's the back end look like?
First of all, we run all of our infrastructure in the cloud. So, you know, everything is cloud-based, scaling dynamically up and down to make sure that we are cost-optimized and we're not spending a lot more than we should to run this. And then we leverage as much optimized code and optimized infrastructure as we can to make sure that everything runs as fast as possible. And if you think about it, in our backend, we essentially have three big separate pieces of backend infrastructure that we need to run to make sure that everything is working properly on. The first one is the data capture process, the crawling process itself, through which we're always visiting the websites and picking up all of the pieces of information that we aggregate. And this is probably the one, in terms of computing power, the most massive one. These days, we don't scale horizontally so much. We've seen that actually scaling vertically in some cases is more cost effective for us. The second big part of our backend infrastructure is databases. And, you know, once we've collected all of the unstructured data, then we process it and we impose some structure on it so that our clients are able to query this data and pull it to their own applications and so on. So we had to store this structured information in databases. And we're really leveraging several different kinds of databases depending on the type of application that we're running. So it's everything from more traditional relational databases to NoSQL databases to some different kinds of data structures that we use. And finally, we have the APIs. And the APIs are what all of our clients see. And they have to interact with these APIs, and they have to be very, very responsive. They have to have a very high uptime. They need to be available 24/7. And we have to have a lot of flexibility with them to be able to update them without causing any downtime to our clients or without breaking anything.
You mentioned that you said it's more cost-effective to scale vertically than scale horizontally. What do you mean by that?
So when we're leveraging the cloud infrastructure, basically we're always trying to calculate where it's more cost-effective for us to run any workload that we're running, especially on the data capture side. So we have sort of an orchestrator to the data capture process that runs calculations to figure out where and how it's more cost-effective to run a particular data capture, to run a particular process. And basically what this will do is it will use public APIs to get pricing from different cloud providers in different regions and so on, and to get pricing to calculate what's going on and where it's the best place to actually allocate the workload that we need to run. And for a long time, the best way to do this was usually to launch several thousand very, very small servers and set them to run a little bit and then shut them down. But over time, just because of a dynamic of the market itself, it actually became more effective to launch a few larger servers instead of launching several smaller ones.
So as you're transitioning to larger servers and bigger workloads, what role do software optimizations play in improving the speed of service?
So software optimization really impacts us in two different parts of our business. The first one is obviously in this whole data capture backend. As we transition to the bigger servers, where having software properly optimized enables us to run more processes on that server, enables us to actually scale it vertically more effectively. So we're able to do more with kind of the same amount of resources that we had before. Another point where software optimization really helps us out is on the API side of our backend. So we're processing today more than 2 billion queries on our APIs per month. And it has some very big spikes in processing because we have clients with very, very unusual querying patterns on top of our API. So having the code that runs behind the APIs optimized enables us to actually use less resources to serve the same amount of queries or to be able to better employ the infrastructure that we have available to serve the requests to our clients so that they always get a few of the API being very responsive and the API being available instead of having issues whenever you have any kind of processing spike.
Can you tell us a little bit about your document validation tool that you have available?
Yeah, sure. Document validation is something that came about because of all of the data that we had available. Basically, we had a lot of clients that were using our data to try and validate the identity of the user when the user was signing up for a service or was doing the initial registration on a form or anything like that. And we saw an opportunity to actually go beyond just simply doing the validation of whatever data the user was typing in as an input and actually do document-based validation where the user will take a picture of their document and will extract the data from the document and validate the information that's inside the document. But the first step to actually be able to extract any data from a document and validate the data that's inside it is actually validate that the picture that was taken is actually a document and trying to figure out what kind of document it is. A lot of people were trying to do this, but nobody had actually developed a solution that actually identified the document and did a bunch of work before going there and extracting the data. So by validating the document and identifying the kind of document that's submitted to a text extraction process, we're able to do the text extraction and do the validation of the information that's inside the document much more effectively than we would be able to if we were just, you know, parsing the data itself and didn't know what kind of document that data was coming from.
So can you walk us through kind of like the workflow that you go through, that the document will go through before you get to text output?
So when we talk about document validation, we're actually talking about a multi-step process, right? So the first one is validating the image itself. So you have to figure out if the image that we received actually meets a minimum set of quality criteria that would enable us to run it through any kind of validation process. The next step is to figure out, okay, what document is it? And figuring out what document is it means matching the image that we receive against a whole set of templates. So we deploy an AI-based model that will try to figure out, based on different document templates and based on the whole history of images that we've seen in the past, tens, if not hundreds of millions of images of documents in the past, it will try to figure out what kind of document is that we're receiving, and it will match it against a particular type of document.
How many documents are you able to classify?
Today, we're working with 20 or 21 different types of documents. These are both local documents, like Brazil-based documents like Brazilian driver's license or a national identity card or even some professional medical license or lawyer's license, which is actually, it works as an identity card for the whole country. And we're able to actually figure out if it matches one of those. But we also have several international documents, not only the passport, but also things like some international driver's license and driver's license for particular countries like Mexico, Australia, the U.S., a few others. So today we have very high classification accuracy for about 21 different types of documents. And then there's a whole bunch more where we can identify it, but we don't have as high classification accuracy as we would like.
What do you do from there?
From there, what we'll do is we'll extract the data that's inside the document. And this is just applying some text extraction, OCR-based technique on top of the image that we received to extract whatever data is inside the document and figure out the fields. And then we'll apply all of the data that we have captured to cross-reference all of the information that's available inside the document and try to figure out if that is an actual valid document or not. And there are a couple of different ways in which we can actually do this. The first one is obviously using numeric validation. So most documents include a numeric code that you can validate somewhere, or even using some of the information that's contained in the document itself. And so whenever that's possible, we will do that. Even when that's possible, there's also some other situations that we've seen where people actually have a valid document number, but then the rest of the information has been somehow manipulated. And so what we'll do is that we'll actually use all of the information that we have internally, all of the information that we've captured from all of the different sources to try and cross-reference all of the different pieces of information that we extracted from the document to figure out if all of the details that are listed in the document actually match an actual person or not. Here in Brazil, for instance, the driver's license will list your full name, your date of birth, the name of your mother, the name of your father, and a couple of other details about you. So we'll take all of those different pieces of information and we'll go into all of our reference data and try to see, hey, have I ever seen someone that has that name and that date of birth and that mother and that father? And if we have, then great. Okay, so this matches an actual person. Even though the document may be faked and may have been manipulated somehow, at least it matches to an actual person. Or what will usually happen in fraud cases is we'll figure out, hey, you know, there is someone with this name, but they weren't born in this particular date, or they don't have this mother, or this is not their father. And so the information will not match. And then we'll flag it as being a counterfeit document.
And I understand that all of this is happening in the cloud, but also running on Intel?
Yeah. And all of this has to happen as close as possible to real time. So the average time that it takes us to do all of this processing and all of this cross-referencing and everything else, our commitment to our clients is to do this in about 5 seconds or so.
That's incredible. We are about out of time for today. I want to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners where they can go for more information about Big Data Corp.
Sure thing. You can just go to our website. It's bigdatacorp.com.br or bigdatacorp.info, and you can find us there.
Well, thank you so much. I understand you're a member of our AI Builders program, and there is more information about your solutions on the Intel AI Builders website as well. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure.
This has been Emily Hudson.
And I'm Derek Osborne.
And you're listening to Intel on AI.